Chapter 13. The second question. Where did these excuses come from? Quote, "Nor deem the irrevocable past as wholly wasted, wholly vain, if, rising on its wrecks at last, to something nobler we attain." Unquote. That's Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. When you go to your doctor with a medical problem, you're prepared to answer questions designed to help him or her determine what's going on and what treatment plan to initiate. One important function of this inquiry is to assist your physician in understanding what precipitated or caused the illness, or the infection, or the trauma. I'm going to use this medical model as a metaphor to explore the question, where did the excuses come from, in relation to making them vanish from your life? Getting to the bottom of your excuses. When it comes to those mental crutches you've relied upon for so many years, it will help you to become your own doctor and to learn the origin and duration of your condition before you implement treatment. Just like physical problems, habituated thinking patterns that keep you from attaining the life of your dreams can be remedied by knowing how and why they occurred, and a program of prevention can then be instituted. Using the same model of an intake interview that your medical doctor would conduct, here are five questions that will help you understand where your excuses came from. Number one, what are your symptoms? Imagine the excuses you've employed as symptoms that have been keeping you from maximizing your potential for happiness, success, and health, even if they may not be as obvious as a fever, a runny nose, a sore throat, or any other physical symptoms that would cause you to seek out medical attention. Describe what you're feeling when you know you've got the excuse bug, and be as specific as you can. Common symptoms include frequent episodes of blame and fault-finding when just about anyone or anything that you think of is held responsible for your unhappiness. Shame that sneakily attacks you, anger at yourself and others, which erupts at the tiniest irritation, envy that breaks out when you compare yourself to others, and laziness, inactivity, and complaining. As the excuse bug takes hold, you notice that you spend a lot of time looking for occasions to be offended. Anyone else's success, happiness, and good health just serves to intensify your symptoms. Self-doubt, resentment, anxiety, worry, hopelessness, sadness, unworthiness, and more may also occur. Number two, when did your symptoms first appear? Your symptoms could very well stem from childhood memories that still persist in adult versions. For example, the rationalization, "I'm too old," may have appeared as, "I'm too young" when you were a teenager. And the adult excuse, "I'm too busy," might have originated as, "I can't do my chores because I have to play with my friends and do my homework and get to bed" when you were in school. Perhaps you also admired family members who modeled seemingly successful excuse-making behavior. These lifelong thinking habits have become so incorporated into your being that only now are you beginning to see them as symptomatic of a disease process. While there's no remedy for the conditions you were exposed to that contributed to the presence of your excuse disease, today you can now see how you were infected at an early age. And the best medicine for this situation may just be found in humor, like actress Tallulah Bankhead's, particularly in the observation she was said to have made that, quote, "The only thing I regret about my past is the length of it. If I had to live my life again, I'd make the same mistakes, only sooner," unquote. Three, whom were you with? Simply knowing whom you were with when you came down with one of your excuse diseases, unfortunately, won't change it. You'll gain a modicum of insight, but the conclusion remains the same. Your past is always going to be the way it was, and there's no way to alter it. Those people you were with when you caught so many self-defeating thinking habits should be pretty much obvious to you by now. They include members of your immediate and extended family, especially your parents and grandparents, teachers, classmates and friends, members of religious organizations, and even folks who appeared on the television programs you watched, in the magazines and newspapers you read, and in the music you listened to. I could go on and on listing all of the ways you were exposed to mind viruses. The only purpose those viruses had was to replicate, infiltrate, and spread whenever and wherever possible, and your inquisitive, open, and willing mind surely was an inviting place for them to take up residence. So when you ask whom you were with when you caught this excuse disease, you can realistically answer that it was most everyone and everything you came into regular contact with from the earliest moments of your life. Question number four, did the people you were around have similar symptoms? Were they contagious? If you were being medically treated for a disease, it would be important to curtail its spread. Not only would you need to be treated accordingly, but whomever you caught it from would need to be so also. In addition, you'd be told how to minimize endangering others, and you might even be isolated to stop the epidemic from growing. The people with whom you had close contact throughout your life carried the illness of excuse-making. Obviously, medication or isolation aren't called for here. But you do need to make the decision to rehabilitate yourself if you are to overcome lifelong habituated thinking habits. While you were growing up and being exposed to the excuses disease, you were unaware of what was happening. The means for transferring the mind viruses you caught was through the magic of mimetics, which I discussed in the opening chapters of this program. Remember that mimic is the root word of mimetics, and you certainly did mimic the infected people around you. You were a ready, willing, and gullible little package for the memes to take root, replicate, and spread in. If your environment hadn't been so fertile, you wouldn't be dealing with the effects of those excuses today. This isn't a reason to blame anyone. There were lots of opportunities, particularly as you grew into your teen years and beyond, when you had a choice in allowing the excuses to take hold or not. Rather, this is all about seeing that in your earliest years, you were a magnet for the energy that was directed at you. And as you got older, you didn't exactly stop pulling excuses towards you and start attracting and nourishing the ways that would have allowed you to outgrow them. And question number 5, were you exposed? The short answer here is yes. Of course you were exposed because you had daily contact with carriers of mind viruses. However, the excuses be gone paradigm is designed to strengthen your natural immune system so that you can deal with any similar disease processes that may come your way now and in the future. Accepting total responsibility. In spite of your history, the one and only place that your excuses originated is in you. Regardless of the age you were when these ideas were implanted, how contagious your early family conditioning was, how frequently you were exposed, and how potent the diseases were in your home, school, church, and culture, the responsibility is still yours. To live in a totally excuse-free life, you must be willing to state, quote, I adopted these behaviors. I chose all of it. I may have been a child, and I may not have had the skills or the natural abilities to resist early influences, but it was all still my choice. I take full responsibility for any and all excuse-making that I've engaged in. Unquote. The reason I took you through the 5 questions in the last section wasn't so you would find new explanations for your habit, but rather so you could just see how prevalent mind viruses were during the formative years of your life. Now, at each stage of exposure to these mind viruses, there was always you. You may have been vulnerable, gullible, fearful, wanting to fit in, or just going along with the program, but there was still you. You're not a chair that's been redesigned and reupholstered or a robot that was created in a laboratory and oiled to perfection by its owners, no. You're a live human being with a mind of your own. After all, other members of your family, perhaps even some of your siblings, weren't fooled like you were, and you probably saw some of your friends resist the efforts of others to enculturate them in the same manner. I encourage you to accept complete responsibility for all of your excuse-making tendencies. You are capable of making choices to cease self-sabotaging thinking habits now, and you were just as capable when you were a child. Yet please don't take responsibility with any sense of shame or self-reproach. Know that throughout your life you always did what you knew how to do. You're not currently being punished or attract these inclinations because of some past life karmic debt. I elaborated the excuse-building symptoms and the contagious effects of these early memes so that you can understand them. Give them a fond embrace and then bid them all farewell. Think about what St. Paul said in his letter to the Corinthians. Quote, when I was a child, I thought like a child. That's from Corinthians 13:11. Look back at those early childlike mimicking behaviors and remind yourself, I no longer need to hang on to anything I adopted as a young person, regardless of how powerful the influences may have been. When you ask, where did these excuses come from? The answer is that they came from you, an individual who was once willing to listen to that kind of thinking. But avow that you now intend to say goodbye and good riddance to excuses that keep you from experiencing the highest, most glorious levels of happiness, success, and health. The key concept to grasp here is that once you start understanding, you can stop rationalizing and justifying. Your past isn't just another reason to explain your deficiencies. Don't tell yourself that old influences are your excuse for making excuses. Take responsibility for your life and discontinue the use of blame and fault-finding. Let's take a look at 4 of the 18 excuses from Chapter 3 to illustrate how your excuse-making habit has been shaped. 1. I don't deserve it. How is it possible for a divine creation to be unworthy? You are and always have been a piece of God, and you know by now that all beings come from non-being. The Bible itself reminds you that it's the Spirit that gives life. So where on earth did you learn to use this excuse? As a developing child, you were weaned on ideas that your worthiness is based on ego-dominated formulations making you what you do, what you have, and what others think of you. Your worth became intertwined with these ego constructs. If I do well, I'm worthy. If I don't, I'm unworthy. If I accumulate more valuable stuff and make more money, I'm worthy. If I don't, I'm unworthy. If I gain the approval of others, I'm worthy. If I'm unpopular, I'm unworthy. Like most of us, you were immersed in a culture that taught and reinforced these ideas, which are the work of the false self. Consequently, as an adult, when you see others who are more successful than you are, have more toys than you do, and enjoy reputations far greater than yours, your first impulse is to make a disconnect between your status in life and your worthiness as a human being. Years of solid training and ego development have caused you to retreat into an I don't deserve it, I'm not worthy mindset. Since these excuses come from the false self, they stay with you until you leave the planet, unless you're willing to tell yourself, okay, I understand where this kind of egoistic reasoning originated, and I can see that I still use it, but I'm practicing the excuses be gone way of life from now on. For every one of these excuse categories, I urge you to decide to start thinking something along the lines of this. Everyone in my life did what they knew how to do, and I chose to buy into it at that time. Today, I'm going to stop this insidious kind of absurd thinking and remind myself that I'm a divine being, an individualized expression of God, and therefore I will no longer entertain thoughts of my being unworthy. I've lived with them long enough, and they never have truly served my highest good. Second excuse, it's not my nature. Have you been allowed to develop as if your Creator were in charge of the process? Of course, your physical body was permitted to take the course nature dictated. You developed the height, body type and shape, hair, eye and skin color, and facial features that nature called for. But what about your personality, your emotional and intellectual development, your aspirations, your self-concept, and your spiritual awareness? Were those aspects of you encouraged to unfold naturally? The excuse, it's not my nature, came directly from the list of what you were taught you couldn't do or be that I elaborated earlier in this program. You were formulated and then crafted into the finished product that your family and culture desired. When you're told, quote, you can't do this, you can only do that, unquote, enough times, and you're willing to become the product the people around you want you to be, then you believe that your nature is what you've been told. You act on the pronouncements about yourself that you've absorbed. So if you hear that you're lazy, undeserving, or uncoordinated often enough, it ultimately leads you to adopt this as your self-portrait. If you're told over and over again that you're just like your father and he never amounted to anything, then you'll ultimately view your nature the way that others viewed your dad. Go back to the question I asked earlier in this program. Who would you be if you didn't have anyone to tell you who you are? Take total responsibility for whatever you believe constitutes your nature, reminding yourself to think in a fresh way about where this excuse originated. Try something like, I chose to allow the opinions of others to be more important than my fledgling opinions of who I was and what I intended to become. Yes, I was small and vulnerable, but it was still my choice. This kicks the old excuse down the stairs and helps you love the person you were then, causing you to tenderly undo what you and not someone else have done. While you can never change the actions of others, taking responsibility for your own life will help you make the shift to an excuses-begone existence. Third excuse, I'm not smart enough. Where do you think you learned that you were somewhat shortchanged in the brains department? Well, you were enrolled in an educational system that assigned numbers to your intellectual capacity. A test gave you an IQ number to carry around for life. You learned to listen to a teacher whose lesson plan wasn't designed for the variety of learning modes in the classroom, so all of the students were being exposed to the same instruction. At the end of the week, a test gave you a grade that measured you against the performances of all of your classmates. You all had your place on a bell-shaped curve depending on your aptitudes that day and that week and on that particular subject area. You developed a self-image based on what teachers, test scores, and academic performance indicated. You learned that you were average at spelling, above average in art, but mentally challenged in mathematics. Soon you had the makings of a great excuse, I'm not smart enough, that you hauled out whenever it was convenient. What you fail to learn is that intelligence tests only measure how well you take intelligence tests. It turns out that academic performance has nothing to do with your potential for intellectual mastery. Nonetheless, your young mind hung on to those school experiences and added them to the messages you'd already absorbed about how you're not as smart as your siblings, you've never been good at figuring out numerical problems, or you're not as talented as the kids next door. This cascade of criticism directed at your intellectual capacities can easily lead you to defend yourself from these jabs with excuses. Fact is that since you're a creation who originated in the world of spirit, you have exactly the right amount of smarts to accomplish all that you will do while you're here. It's all perfect, and so are you. To me, a person like my son-in-law, Joe, who can lay a beautiful hardwood floor and have it come out flawlessly, is a genius. Whether or not he performed well in some aptitude test, Joe's genius is displayed in his artistic sense, in that magnificent mind that arranges and positions the grain of the wood, leveling and sealing with endless measurements and computations. You too have all the intelligence you need for anything that ignites your creative and problem-solving passion. Believe this about yourself, and you'll never want or need to trot out the excuse, "I'm not smart enough," again. And excuse number 4, the rules won't let me. Always obeying the rules is a meme or a mind virus that became an acceptable indicator of your honesty and integrity. But note this sentence in Martin Luther King's letter from the Birmingham City Jail on April the 16th in 1963. Quote, "We can never forget that everything that Hitler did in Germany was legal, and everything that the Hungarian freedom fighters did in Hungary was illegal," unquote. I also love this observation from Ralph Waldo Emerson. Quote, "No law can be sacred to me but that of my nature," unquote. I'm not making a case here for being lawless and indifferent to edicts that govern a civilized society. I am encouraging you to recognize what some of our finest minds say about running your life by rules. I include here what my great teacher Lao Tzu wrote in the Tao Te Ching. When the greatness of the Tao is present, action arises from one's own heart. When the greatness of the Tao is absent, action comes from the rules. Live your life in accordance with a Tao-centered or God-realized point of view. You know what is right, what your heart tells you. You know that you don't need cumbersome rules laid down by others, some of which make no sense to obey at all, to guide you. This fourth excuse is a huge cop-out in every sense of the word. I want to cite one more famous American who was adamant about the need for feeling a sense of independence as a criterion for living a full, happy, successful, and healthy life. Listen to his words carefully. Quote, "The care of every man's soul belongs to himself. But what if he neglects the care of it? Well, what if he neglects the care of his health or his estate? Will the magistrate make a law that he shall not be poor or sick? Laws provide against any injury from others, but not from ourselves. God himself will not save men against their wills," unquote. The person who wrote those words was none other than Thomas Jefferson. So there you have some of history's most admired teachers reminding you that the rules should never be a final factor in determining anything about yourself. Instead, these wise men ask you to go within and be guided by what your passion dictates, as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else, of course. If you have a tendency to employ the excuse, "the rules won't let me," know that it was handed down and enforced by those who wish to control your behavior. Yet here again, it's important to take full responsibility for your own actions. You're no longer a child who needs rules to make sure you're safe, healthy, and functional within a family or a classroom. Be willing to consult your adult sense of what's right for you. Assertively pursue that vision, keeping a silent vigil on your inner passion. Overlook the pressures to do things by following instructions and edicts that are simply no longer applicable to you. As you can see, all of these excuses originated in the earliest years of your life. But even as you take responsibility for your role in excuse-making, always be kind to yourself. Remember that you only did what you knew how to do when you were a child. And so go visit those wrecks that Longfellow talked about in his poem. Discover where they came from and why they've persisted for so long as your habituated ways of thinking. Do as the poet suggests and move on to an excuses-begone life, which is far nobler than an existence full of self-sabotaging questions. Suggestions for applying this second paradigm question. First, the most helpful suggestion I can offer you regarding the question of where did these excuses come from is to answer it with the following four words. They came from myself. Take total responsibility for your thoughts in the form of the words that come out of your mouth today. By all means, study the proliferation of mind viruses and early childhood conditioning practices that were directed your way. But also practice thinking and saying, I chose to use excuses as a child. I didn't realize at the time that I had other choices available. I realize I've continued to choose those excuses until now. Be solely responsible. You have no one to blame. You don't need to wait for anyone to come around and undo what he or she did, since you can't become an excuse maker without giving your consent. And if you have given your consent, the excuses be gone paradigm revokes it now. And secondly, forgive everyone, including yourself. All those individuals who proliferated mind viruses and conditioning were only doing what they knew how to do given the circumstances of their lives, and those meme dispensers are only one generation removed from receiving the same kind of habituated thinking. Keep in mind the line from the prayer of St. Francis, quote, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, unquote. Eschew blame and free yourself from anything that's been plaguing your life and holding you back from activating your highest calling. By forgiving everyone, you pardon them and yourself. And remember, if you'd never blamed anyone for your tendencies toward being an excuse maker, you'd have no one to forgive.